Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, and I just couldn't help but think just how marvelous the singing is, and what a blessing it is to have this number of people who are able to worship together and to blend our voices in song, and that's so encouraging. So many people in congregations over this country and over the world that don't have this amount of numbers here, and it's just really a joy to be able to sing praises to God with so many people. Thank you for being here. There's several folks who really been having some good things here as the new year starts. We've got new grandbabies and people that are healthy that have been so sick and getting healthy, and so appreciative of that. Got some people who are engaged, and that's a great way to start out the new year. In fact, I just want to say a special word of congratulations to David and Caitlin. That's just great, and we're happy for you, overjoyed for you. And I might also say this, I really haven't said this, I don't believe, publicly before, but the PowerPoint announcements are now being handled by David Gentry, and he's just been doing an excellent job with that. And I noticed he slipped in a little engagement slide in there. So, no, that was great, and that's just wonderful. We're very happy for both David and Caitlin. This photograph is the top of Mount Nebo, or Mount Pisgah, and it is looking from the eastward side of the Jordan River across those stormy banks, as we just sung about, to the westward side of the Jordan, into the Promised Land. And this is the view that Moses would have had. You recall that the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy talks about Moses not being allowed to enter into the Promised Land, but instead God allowing him to gaze upon the Promised Land from this vantage point atop Mount Nebo. And this whole scene reminds us, I hope, of the Israelites, that second generation of Israel, there on that eastern side of the Jordan River, along with Moses. And at that point, not Moses, but at least the second generation of Israel would be about to cross over the Jordan River and enter into the Promised Land. And even as we talked about this morning in our auditorium class, it is on that occasion when the Israelites are on that eastward side of the Jordan River and are about to cross into the Promised Land that Moses addresses the people in several speeches. And those speeches are recorded for us in the book of Deuteronomy. And what you see really is Moses giving his last words of admonishment and encouragement of those people. And there's so many things that are said here, but I want to just read a few verses this morning from Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning with verse 4 and going down to the end of verse 12. I think this is a marvelous excerpt of what you see Moses talking with the Israelites about in all these speeches that are recorded for us in the book of Deuteronomy. He says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. And you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Then it shall come about when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, great and splendid cities which you did not build, and houses full of all good things which you did not fill, and hewn cisterns which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, and you shall eat and be satisfied. Then watch yourself, lest you forget the Lord who brought you from the land of Egypt out of the house of slavery. As I said, I think this excerpt is a marvelous example of the kind of things that we see Moses saying to the Israelites in his final words, his final words of admonishment. I'd like to talk to you this morning about the three things that Moses says in the words that we have just read. First of all, what Moses desperately wanted that second generation of Israel to understand was their need to love the Lord their God. He says again in verse 4 and 5, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might." And what you see is Moses desperately concerned that this generation of Israel is not going to love God, not love Him the way that they should. And he knows that he's dealing with a people who, if you ask them the question, "Do you love God?" they'd say, "Well, sure we do." But he's worried about them. And he wants to make sure they really appreciate who and what God is. In fact, he prefaces this whole thing in verse 4 by saying, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." That's oftentimes viewed as the classic biblical statement of monotheism. The Jews refer to that as the Shema, because the first word in Hebrew, "hear," in the phrase, "Hear, O Israel," is Shema. And so this is the classic statement of monotheism. The Lord, Yahweh, is our God, and He is one. There is no other God. He is in a category all by Himself. And the thing that Moses wants them to appreciate about God is that they need to love Him because of who and what He is. Do we really appreciate this God that we have the privilege to serve even in our day? As we are, so to speak, on this side of the Jordan River, and we ourselves are awaiting that time when we can cross over into our promised land, do we appreciate this God and who He is and therefore love Him with everything that we have? He is the creator of all things. There is no other God besides Him. In fact, the statement that Paul makes at the end of his letter to Timothy, his first letter to Timothy, is one I'd like us to just take note of. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, if you come down to verse 15 and 16, he says this, second half of verse 15. "He is the blessed and only sovereign, the King of kings and Lord of lords, who alone possesses immortality and dwells in unapproachable light, whom no man has seen or can see. To Him be honor and eternal dominion. Amen." Folks, I want to tell you what, if we really want to love God the way that we need to, it has to all start with appreciating who and what He is. He's in a category all by Himself. He alone possesses immortality, Paul says, because life is His essence. There's nothing contingent about Him. He's all about existence and life. That's not true with any of us. We only exist, we only live at His behest. And were He to withdraw His hand from us, then we would cease to be. And everything around us would cease to be. That's who He is. And indeed, the Lord is our God, and the Lord is one. He is the one who dwells, Paul says, in unapproachable light. That can be said about no other being. And we need to appreciate what David had in mind when he said in Psalm 51 and verse 4, confessing his sin, he said that he understood that against Thee, O God, I have sinned, and Thee alone. And that puzzles people sometimes because we think about the sins of David and he sinned against a lot of different people. But ultimately the point I believe David is making is that all sin ultimately is against deity, and there is no deity except Yahweh. He is the one and only. And so all sin is ultimately against him. And that's what Moses wanted the Israelites to understand. You need to understand, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And therefore, he says, you need to love him. And look at how he phrases this. You need to love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul and with all of your might. Do you think maybe, just maybe, the concern that Moses has is their degree of love is not going to be sufficient? You think that's why he says it the way he does? Seems to me that's the reason why. He's talking about our need to love God with every part of our being, with everything that we have. And if we truly appreciate his greatness and his magnitude, then that's what we will do. We will love him with all of our heart, soul, and mind. And that's the reason why Jesus said in Matthew 22 that loving God is the first and foremost commandment. Everything else just springs from that. And so Moses wanted the Israelites to make sure that they loved God with everything that they had. And it's that kind of love that we need to possess. And it's a love that needs to be demonstrated. It's a love that needs to be shown. It's not just saying how much I love Jesus when I come to church on Sunday. It's a matter of showing him that we love him with all of our heart, mind, and soul throughout the week. Is that something that we are doing? As we begin this new year, I'd like us to think about these things that Moses was wanting that generation of Israel to think about. We need to make sure that we love our God. And also what he says in these verses that we have been looking at, he says that you need to teach your children about Yahweh and about all these things that he's done for you. Teach your children. Verse 6, back in Deuteronomy chapter 6. And these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead, and you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. He's talking here about the importance of that generation of Israel, those parents teaching their children about God. And I think it's so important for us to see that here in Moses' final words, and this is the only time he says this, but it's exemplary of what he says in all these final word speeches. He wants them, he's desperate for them to teach their children these things. So the children won't fail to have a knowledge of the greatness of Yahweh and all the things that he's done and all the things that he has commanded. How do you teach your kids? Parents, how do we teach our kids? How do we bring our children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord? How do you do that? Well, somebody says we need to make sure that we have some family Bible studies with them. That's a good idea. You need to make sure that you bring your kids to Bible class every Sunday morning and Wednesday night. That's a real good idea. I think all that is important. But do you really appreciate the gist of what Moses is saying here as he describes to them this whole teaching process? He's not really talking in these verses so much about a formal kind of family devotion or a formal kind of Bible class that you might have at church service, as wonderful as all that is and as important as all that is. But he's talking about something much more important when it comes to the teaching process. He's talking about teaching your children throughout the day, every day, by just talking with them about the things of God. Do you get that? He says, you shall talk of them, verse 7, when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. What does that suggest to you? He's just talking about the fact that you need to talk with your kids just in the daily affairs of life. When you get up in the morning, when you lie down at night. The things of God should just be the kinds of things that are the normal, ordinary part of our conversation. You know, sometimes, and this is certainly true of my generation, I don't think it's as true of this generation, but sometimes there has kind of been a generation gap between parents and children, and sometimes you have children grow up, and okay, I mean, they love their parents, the parents love their kids, but there's just some reason why they just never really talk to one another. Let me tell you what, you need to talk to your kids. You need to converse with your kids. It's not simply some matter of having some formal big discussion with them. Moses is talking here about just your daily conversations. And talk with your kids. And he says one of the main items of subject matter in those conversations with your children is the things about Yahweh. The things about God. And we need to have homes where talking about the things of God, it's just an ordinary course of discussion. Nothing odd about bringing up the God or His laws just in the most ordinary and mundane of situations. Over the breakfast table, or there's some TV show and something is said, and so that reminds you of something about what the Bible says about God, and so that just kind of comes up in conversation. Or you're kind of driving to school, or you're driving to work, and so you just are talking about those things that have to do with God. It's as ordinary and natural a kind of conversation as it can be. And that's what Moses is describing here. And he talks, as he goes on, about how your household needs to be a household where the things of God are just an ordinary, regular, acknowledged part of what makes this household this kind of household. That's why he talks about how you write these laws on the gates of your house and the doorposts of your house. And that's why he talks about how you bind my commandments upon your hand and bind them on your forehead. And of course, Jews would later literally do that kind of thing with phylacteries, little pieces of scripture, then little boxes that they would attach those to their arm or attach it to a band around their forehead. But he's just talking about the fact of you just discussing these things when you go to work, when you're at work, when you're at home. That's just kind of what your life is. And I'll tell you what. It all starts with what he says in verse 6. Before he says the words, teach your children, he says in verse 6, and these words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. Shall be on your heart. What's that mean? What seems to me what that means is these words that I'm teaching you, that God is revealing to you, those things are just what you love to talk about. They're on your heart. You're just excited about that. Isn't that what that suggests to you? Are there certain things that you just love to converse with people about? Maybe it's your job. Maybe you're one of those people, you love what you do. And if anybody ever asks you about your job, you just, I've known people like that, you know. Don't ever ask them what's going on with their work because they're going to tell you. And they, you can tell. They just love it. It's on their heart and they'll just talk about that. And some with some people, it's their hobbies. You know, something they're really interested in. It's just something on their heart. It's important to them. And what do we converse about with people? The things that we enjoy, the things that are important to us. That's what Moses is talking about here. The laws of God and things of God should not be something that we kind of separate and categorize in some special slot in our life, having nothing to do with just the rest of our daily life. And with some people, that's kind of the way it is. And the things of God are, you know, well, yeah, you got to kind of talk about that. It's Sunday, we got to go to church, and we got to talk about these things of God, and you know, all that, you know. And we're just a little uncomfortable with all that. And we kind of like it better when it's just the rest of the week and we just kind of, you know, let loose and not, you know, not worry about all that stuff about God. That's the way some people are. And if that's the way you are, And if having conversations with your children just throughout the day about the things of God is something that would seem to be odd to you or make you a little bit uncomfortable, well, then I would suggest to you, you don't really have all these things on your heart. They're not important enough to you. And you haven't created a household where that's just kind of what makes the household run. That's what we are. And that's really, I think, what Joshua later meant when he said, about a generation later, as for me and my house, we're serving the Lord. That's what that means. So we need to teach our children. And you teach your children in the best way and the most important way about God by talking and conversing with them. Just ordinary conversation, but the subject matter is God and the things of God. And I tell you what, that's the best way to help pass along this information and this faith in God from one generation to another. Well, there's a third thing that Moses says in the excerpt that we have cited this morning. He says in verses 6 and following, really all the way, verses 10 through 12. He says, don't forget God's blessings. Don't forget God's blessings. And I want to read these verses again, verses 10 through 12. Then it shall come about when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, great and splendid cities which you did not build, and houses full of all good things which you did not fill, and hewn cisterns which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, and you shall eat and be satisfied, then watch yourself, lest you forget the Lord who brought you from the land of Egypt out of the house of slavery. You know, it's obvious from reading those verses and the way Moses words all of that, that he's concerned that this forgetting about God and losing a sense of appreciation for the good things that God has done, he's concerned about that happening when they get in the promised land and things go well for them. In fact, the point of emphasis here is you're entering into a land where God's giving you all these things and you're not having to work for them, really. You're going to be living in a land and taking over this land from the Canaanites as an act of judgment from God, but then a way of God blessing the Israelites. And so that's going to mean that you're going to have houses and all these possessions, and you didn't work to provide those things for yourself. And here are all these vineyards, and you didn't plant all of them. And there are cisterns of life-giving water, but you didn't dig all of those. And so all these things you're going to have, and it's going to be a gift to you. And Moses says, that's when I'm worried about you forgetting about God. And if you just kind of back up and look at that, you know, there's something odd about that on the surface. You know, why would any human being, when you've received all these blessings from God, why would that be the occasion when you would be likely to forget about Him? Doesn't that seem odd on the surface? And yet, when we look at our own lives, what do we see? That tends to be the time when we forget about God, when we begin to take Him for granted. When everything has gone well, when everything is going well, that tends to be the occasion when it's easy for us as human beings to forget about the one who really has given us all of these blessings. In a classic passage in Judges chapter 2 and verse 10, the text says, "And all that generation, Joshua's generation, also were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel." Why didn't they know the Lord? And why didn't they understand about the things that God had done for Israel? Well, I'll tell you one reason why. It's probably because, as we said a moment ago, that the parents didn't teach their kids very well and didn't converse about those things adequately enough. That's probably one reason why. But I think the other reason why that you see in the context of all of this is that by the end of Joshua's battles and the conquest of Canaan, the end of Joshua's life and that generation, those people were now in possession of the promised land. Now, they still had some remnants of Canaanite people in their respective territories, but they were the ones who had ownership of this land. And all of that had been provided for them. And as ironic as it may seem, it's nevertheless the case that that then is the generation stop serving the Lord. Didn't have a knowledge of Yahweh, didn't seek a knowledge of Yahweh, and just began to fall away. Moses says, don't forget God's blessings. And sometimes, brethren, the time when we are most prone to forget God's blessings is when things are going good. I'll tell you when that lesson was brought home to me in a very graphic way. Amy and I are in Pasadena, Texas. I'm a young preacher. I get a phone call from a woman whom I had not met before, but she said, can you, Brother Pickup, please come to the hospital? My husband is in the hospital. I'd like you to pray for us. So, I'd be happy to do that. So I came to the hospital, and I meet this couple. And they are both in tears. Because the husband, the initial diagnosis was cancer, and they didn't yet know about the severity of that cancer and whether it was going to be operable or anything like that. And I'm in the room with two people, and it's obvious. They are both scared. They are scared. And I knew that these people, though I had not met them before, I knew that at one point in time they had been faithful Christians. And so I first talked with the wife, and she's saying, please pray for my husband. We're just so scared. He's possibly going to die here. And she says to me, I know, Brother Pickup, we have not been at church. I know we've not been faithful Christians, but I want you to know that's going to change. And so I went into the room, and then here's the husband, and he was just beside himself. And he said these words to me. He says, I know I have not been living as a Christian. I know I have not for years and years. And here I'm maybe on my deathbed. He said, Brother Pickup, I vow to you that if God will, and I'll vow this to God, that if God will just spare my life and will just give me my health back, I'm going to turn my life around. We're both going to turn our lives around, and we're going to start serving the Lord and start being the right kind of Christian that we should be. And of course, I talk with them about the fact that, well, that's exactly what they needed to do. And so we prayed. And I'll tell you what happened. He got better. And actually, in a relatively short period of time, the cancer, and I don't recall, it's been so many years, whether the diagnosis of cancer, it turned out, no, it wasn't cancer, or whether, yes, it was cancer, but they were able to then treat it pretty quickly. But whatever the case, pretty quickly, it became very evident this man was going to have full recovery. Guess what? They never darkened the door of the church building. Never. And I was struck by that because I don't know, I had ever seen any people more in a desperate
need for God and talking about God and talking about dedication to God and promising to be dedicated to God. I mean, that was, you talk about conversations about God. That was the conversation. Nothing else was important. God was on their heart. When things in their life were as calamitous as they could be, but then when things got better, what did they do? They forgot about God's blessings. They forgot about who it was who had brought this man back to his health. And I think about that sometimes in regard to our situation and our prayers. You know, that's kind of the way it is when life brings us to our knees. Well, that's kind of when we're in the best position to pray to God. And so that's what people do. They pray to God when there's no other hope. When it's just graphically and drastically brought before their minds, I need God desperately. And yeah, that's when people lift up their voices to God and praise Him and seek His blessing. That's what people do. And we ask God to please heal us of the disease, and we ask God to please help us with this calamity that we're going through, and we ask God, whatever the issue is, to please give us some relief from that issue. But you know what God may be thinking? And I wonder if sometimes we think about it from this vantage point. I wonder if God might be thinking, you know what? I know how this person is. It may be that the worst thing I could do for this person is to grant his request. It may be that if I bless this person with restored health, or I bless this person with some deliverance from that financial problem that has been so overwhelming to him or to her, it may be that that's going to be the very occasion, well, then they will quit looking toward me and quit serving me. You think maybe God looks at it that way from time to time? Because that's certainly the way that human beings are so often. When things get better, that's so often when we lose our focus upon God. And so I wonder sometimes. I wonder maybe if the reason why God doesn't answer some of our prayers, where we're pleading to Him for this or for that, maybe, and I don't know, I can't know His mind or His will, but I'm just suggesting based upon this, maybe it's that God knows, given our character, that'd be the worst thing He could do for us. Maybe what we need to do is be more diligent about showing the Lord, I'm going to serve you whether times are good or bad. I'm going to serve you whether you bless me or not. I'm going to serve you whether you respond to my prayer the way I like, or whether you do things in your good time, or don't do things at all, because Lord, it's about your will being done and not mine. If we would show the Lord that kind of attitude, maybe He'd see it's more in our interest for Him to go ahead and give us deliverance from whatever that difficulty is. But maybe sometimes the Lord knows. Worst thing He could do for us would be to make things get better for us. Moses says to the people who are fixing to go into to the promised land, he says, I'm worried about you. Because things are going to be good for you when you go in there. And yeah, right now you're in the wilderness, and right now things have not been good, but boy, it's going to change, and it's going to change real quickly. And he says, I'm worried about you when all these things happen, and you receive all these blessings from God, and you didn't deserve any of them. Watch out, he says. Don't forget that God's the one who's given you all these blessings. Moses begs that generation, please don't forget. And so I think those final words of Moses are some words that you and I can benefit from greatly. 2011, maybe it's going to be a lot better year than 2010, 2009, 2008. I know a lot of folks, you know, we've talked about this a lot. You know, we've kind of had some bad times here the last two, three years. And so maybe things are going to turn around. And That's great if it does, if we don't forget. If we don't forget who gives all these good and perfect gifts. Are you here this morning and need to respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ? We'd love to help you do that. If we can assist you in any way in obeying the Lord, won't you come while together we stand and sing this song of encouragement?